Hi, and welcome to this discussion of the Advanced Higher Classical Studies topic, Individual and Community. I'm Andy McKellar. I'm the PA for the subject, and I'm very glad to be joined by Lee Baker. And we're going to discuss some of the aspects of this course and look at ideas for how best to prepare yourselves for facing the exam.
Thanks, Andy. Could you summarise initially what the option called individual and community is about and why this is useful for a modern school pupil to study?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. It focuses on the work of the Greek classical philosophers, Plato and Aristotle, and their ideas about how a state should be organised in terms of how it should be ruled, what the responsibilities are of those in charge, what the rights should be of individual citizens. And so it helps to explore what have been eternal problems that human beings have had when they try to establish communities. And the things that they talk about and the issues that they raise are no less relevant now than they were then. What pupils would find if they delve into any kind of political course that they might study is that the core texts they will almost certainly begin with will in fact still be Plato's Republic and Aristotle's Politics. They've been so influential. And Cicero's work on duties has also been used as a guidebook for political leaders ever since the Middle Ages. So yeah, this topic has huge application to all thoughts about how we're ruled and what our rights and responsibilities might be.
Gosh, it seems like a really fascinating path to take into the classical world. Could you tell me a wee bit more about the Republic? What books is it you study of Plato's Republic? Because I know it's quite a hefty text. And what sort of episodes are involved in that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it's a huge book. Plato's work is all designed to be almost read like a drama. Plato was the philosopher who was the sort of central figure of that amazing three philosophical minds, Socrates, his pupil Plato, and then Plato's pupil Aristotle. So Plato was at the centre of that. And what he wanted to do in his writings, as well as put forward his own ideas, was to sort of immortalise the ideas of his teacher Socrates, who had fundamentally believed that the written word was dangerous, in fact. And so he always taught his pupils orally. And he felt the written word was dangerous because once it was written down, the author kind of lost control of what they meant. And because writing can be interpreted in so many different ways, he kind of thought that anything you write down could be manipulated by other people to actually pass on the wrong message. So what Plato did when he wrote down Socrates' words was do it in the form of dialogues. So it was as if you were just reading, listening to an ongoing discussion between these great thinkers. And the Republic is one which begins with the simple question of what is justice? And various members of the Athenian group who are involved in this dialogue give their suggestions about what they think justice might be. And these will tend to touch on lots of what we might see as common sense ideas of what justice are. But Socrates will then interrogate those during that opening book and ultimately find out at the end that all of these traditional views of justice, they all kind of fall short. They all have problems. And he ultimately concludes that the only way to really establish what justice is for us to imagine a kind of utopian society, where we think about everything being designed in that society to be completely fair. And if we do that, we will create a utopia which embodies justice. By exploring that, we can maybe answer the question of what justice is. So it ends up being a colossal work. We just studied the first half of it, but it just raises so many fascinating ideas. It's just terrific to teach and discuss. There's so many important thoughts that come up for the pupils. Lots of thoughts about their everyday lives that they'll suddenly realise are right there.
Gosh, that sounds incredible. I always have a bit of a fear when it comes to philosophy, but when you put it like that, it sounds like something that we should be trying to incorporate into so many other aspects of what we teach as well. So you said that Aristotle was the pupil of Plato, and do you think Plato's work has had a significant influence on Aristotle or not so much so? Where does it fit into this?
I think that's a great question. Definitely there's a big influence, but Aristotle, I suppose, like the best pupils, feels that he can go beyond his teacher, and he does in so many ways. So an awful lot of what Aristotle is doing within politics is exploring the ideas of Plato and indicating where he thinks they've come up short. And it's in his approach that's probably the most interesting contrast, where Plato likes to sort of imagine an ideal of anything, really, of justice, particularly within the Republic, and then kind of reason from thinking abstractly. Aristotle feels that it's more important to try and view the world as it is right now and kind of extrapolate from the way you see human beings behaving what is actually natural and possible for human beings. So, interestingly, Aristotle takes Plato's idea of philosopher kings. Plato comes up with this idea that, you know, we need leaders who can understand and think philosophically. That's what we need to try and encourage as our sort of government. Aristotle takes that idea and says, well, yeah, okay, but it's not going to happen. You're not going to have philosopher kings capable of actually doing that. So in a sense, it's not possible. So why discuss it as if it is possible? Why not look at what is possible? Now, Aristotle is full of just dreadful areas of blindness and bigotry. So we should never lose sight of that, much, much more so than Plato. Plato has amazing sort of insights on the idea that there's no reason why women should not be afforded all the rights to rule that men do. You know, really surprising things when we consider how long ago it is and how long it's taken for the sort of civilized world to fully embrace that notion. Plato had it right there. Sadly, Aristotle steps back on that, and he has some really blinkered views on that sort of stuff. But he also has some fantastic views on the way in which societies should try to ensure they look after all citizens. So it's just a fascinating comparison. I think reading the two together is probably better than reading just one of them, because they're almost in an ongoing discussion with each other all the time.
And would you, when you're teaching this, would you read Plato first and then Aristotle? Or would you sort of go between them both?
I always start with Plato. Plato it's much more readable, I think, because it's designed in dialogue form. He's also just a staggeringly good writer. He has all the skills of a novelist. He'll sort of foreshadow ideas in one book, and then suddenly they resurface in a different guise in the second book, and you realise it was all designed to tie together. So it's always great to begin with Plato. And by the time we then got onto Aristotle, because we've delved so deeply into Plato's thinking, almost every topic that you then come to in Aristotle, it lends itself to comparative discussion.
Yes.
Think about how Plato dealt with this. So I would do them in that way. But then in that latter phase of the course, what you're doing largely as you're dealing with Aristotle is thinking about both authors almost simultaneously. Every single period you're thinking about, how does this reflect on what Plato originally said about it?
That's an interesting way to think about approaching it. Now, we haven't really mentioned the third author, who is Cicero. And I wonder if he's, you know, conspicuous by absence in our discussion, because I don't associate Cicero as a philosopher, but he's involved in this topic. So could you just explain to me why he's here and what he explores?
Absolutely. Yeah, he doesn't lend himself to this comparative thing quite so much simply because he's separated so distantly from the other two by time. You know, they're almost contemporaries, really. So Cicero is centuries later, and obviously he's within the Roman Empire rather within the Greek world. But his book itself is a fascinating one to study. From a historical perspective, it's one of the last, if not the last, of Cicero's works. And it's really at the time when he understood that he was no longer going to be a mover and a shaker in the world of politics at all. He had lost, I think, is the way he viewed it in terms of what was going on in Roman politics. But that didn't mean he felt he couldn't make a lasting impact instructing the world on what was wrong with the leaders who had now taken over. So the book itself is written in the guise of advice for his son on how to be a member of the ruling class, which he ultimately, of course, is just going to be. But it's continually pointing at the faults and the failings of particularly Julius Caesar and the rest of the triumvirate that he's a part of. Crassus comes in for some terrible abuse, using his vast wealth to sort of exploit the poor and gain power in that way. So it's all about trying to persuade the reader, his son ostensibly, that doing the expedient thing, which is dishonourable, is never, ever a good thing. And that, of course, is exactly what he feels that Caesar and his cronies have been doing, and what the senators who've allowed it to happen have just been sort of green lighting. So it's a really timely reminder when you're looking at politics in any situation, the modern world around us, to think about the conduct that we should expect of our leaders, and to think about the danger of simply allowing people that you don't respect, who use sort of nefarious means to achieve their ends, allowing them to actually continue and prosper, to nobody's benefit ultimately, except their own, is how Cicero sees it.
Gosh, I mean, there's no more relevant thing in the current climate, is there, to be addressing? Okay, thank you. You've covered a huge range of themes and aspects that these texts pick up on throughout your description of each of these authors' works. If you were to give advice to a candidate, and you were to say, right, what could a candidate do either in their exam or in preparation for the exam to really ensure that their answers were getting to the highest marks, what would your advice be?
Well, I think a good place to start is to look at the aspects of study which are kind of indicated within the course spec itself, and try and gather perspectives from each of the three authors on those topics. So, for example, in the different ways that states could be organised, it broadly comes down to they could be largely democratic, ruled by the majority, they could be tyrannical, ruled by an individual, or they could be some sort of mixture in between. So gather together a good solid body of evidence that would give a clear view of what each of the authors thinks of these three perspectives, positives and negatives. Interestingly, Cicero lives in a time when it's just assumed that they'll have a kind of mixed constitution where largely it's a minority rule, but the democratic element has some say, a republican viewpoint. And that is also the sort of assumption that Aristotle makes. But Aristotle, he goes into great detail to describe why he feels that is a better system than a system which relies too heavily on the will of the people, because he feels the people can be too easily swayed by a really popular and charismatic leader. They all reject the idea of a tyrant, a tyranny, but often, interestingly, because it's a bad system of government. Your country will not prosper, will not succeed, because a tyrant will have bad advice or be surrounded by flatterers. So gather that information about each of these things, different ways the states can be governed, how that impacts on different classes and orders of how a class system should operate within your city, how the rich and poor should be sort of managed. Should wealth be equal? Should there be a distribution of wealth in certain ways? Plato's suggestion is very radical. He almost produces a communist sort of viewpoint initially, that wealth should simply be shared and it shouldn't be something that motivates anyone in the city. If you've got a strong body of evidence, you could support the view of each of your three authors on these key topics. Any question that you're then presented with in the exam will be very doable for you.
Excellent. Sage advice. Well, thank you so much. You almost convinced me to move over to this topic.
Oh, fantastic. A new philosopher on board every day. Thanks very much. Okay, thanks for joining us for this discussion.